All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back, guys. I know. I had some technical difficulties over here. Hopefully you guys can all hear me now perfectly loud and clear. Welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and using your own money against you. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan, Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And tonight's guest is Ben Boren, currently the first Vice Chair Affiliates Director for the Libertarian Party of Michigan, also the Outreach Director for the Northwest Michigan Libertarian Affiliate. A Northern Nevada native, has spent at least the last 4 years living in Charlevoix, Michigan and surrounding areas. No stranger to grassroots organizing, Ben and his volunteer campaign are eager and ready to run for Congress in Michigan District 1. In fact, they are. Ben and his team are all 35 or younger. Imagine that. It's not a party of old white guys trying to bend you over with whatever government programs they can dream up. But of course, before we get started, if you're watching this live stream, make sure you like and share it. During the stream, comment and ask your questions. If you think we're wrong, say something, comment it. Like it, share it, invite your friends, start a watch party, do all that fun stuff. And of course, head over to taxationistheft.info because there's a lot of really cool stuff over there that you can do to support our show and our effort to end taxation around the world and in the United States. And of course, make sure you like and subscribe to all of our channels and subscribe to the podcast, which is available where all fine podcasts are available. We're right up there in the list. And now on to the show. Ben, how's it going? Okay. Oh, yeah, go for it. I still heard you talking, so we'll live without seeing your pretty little face for now while you share it. So what's going on? You're running for U.S. Congress.
I considered myself a candidate, per se. I liked activism and got involved in the party, really involved in the party when I got to Michigan and everything like that. And it's been kind of a wild ride, you know. Went to my first convention in like 2018 for, you know, the state level, watched a bunch of crazy people argue, sat in the back of the room, just people watched, yeah. You know. And I was like, God dang, this is so bizarre. I cannot believe, you know, it was just really interesting for me. I've done a lot of different things in my life, but I never thought it would get so bad that I would actually feel like a call to duty, like I had to, you know, start preaching too. So then, you know, do that. Next thing you know, I feel like it was the very next convention. I decided to run for vice chair, affiliates director of the state of Michigan, you know, and did that darn thing. And then, you know, answered the call again at this next convention, which was kind of shuffled because we had a semi-convention, COVID convention, then we had an in-person convention later. So the campaign was up against like some different hurdles, including starting late. So, you know, we've learned a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I was actually, I'm trying to think. I was at the Illinois convention, which was supposed to happen the day before the Michigan convention. The Michigan convention got postponed. So, but that was the one that you were at that I was supposed to be at, it sounds like. Yeah. How did that go down? Like, well, first of all, when was it? Because it was supposed to be like the day it was supposed to be was like, it was like a week before all the states started shutting down.
Yeah.
But like everybody was like starting to get the fear. Like everybody, like you could feel it at the Illinois convention. Everybody was afraid to shake hands and all that kind of stuff. Like, And the Michigan convention was supposed to be the day after that.
Yeah, it was. I think there was like a 2-day Illinois convention, if I'm not mistaken, but business was done on the first day or something like that. So a lot of people were planning on traveling, road tripping, flying into Michigan for that convention. It sounded like we were going to have a great debate. Now what had happened, the area that we were going to have a convention became a hotspot. We saw, 25 known cases the day before confirmed within a quarter mile of the location of the convention. So, and I don't know if I was right or wrong in this. I was very hard-headed and had put in a lot of work trying to get different people, different presidential candidates and do things and people there. So I was like, it's on, it's on, it's on. And I was talking with my chair, Gregory Stemple, about that. And it's on, and he had to make a judgment call, and it got shut down, which, I was heartbroken. I think if it were me, I probably would have done that. And I can't say that that was the best decision, either way, but I did want to do that. So yeah, we got shut down right there. And I was really looking forward to hanging out with all my favorite presidential candidates.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. And I know I was really pissed off about that.
Another side note, I do believe we are one of the first states to conduct an completely electronic convention. Now, it basically took us 10 hours to decide who our delegates would be to the national convention. So we used Zoom, and we also had like a secure way of voting, like that was through verified email, different things like that. It was a very, very good system, but it's Zoom. It's just not going to work that well. It's just not the same thing.
So, right.
Yeah, we were one of the first. It was quite interesting. I was pretty burned out after that convention.
It's going to be interesting to see if, because I think even the Democrats, or maybe it was the Republicans, did the same thing at some point. I know they've got a lot more people showing up. I wonder what the future of this is going to be. Is Zoom is Zoom going to add some more features that help out with Robert's rules? Is there going to be is somebody else going to come along and create a new software platform for this? That's going to be really interesting because, we hear this all the time, before COVID, people complaining that, especially in Texas, the convention's too far away. I mean, Texas is huge, right? So there's a potential you could have a 15-hour drive to get to your state convention. but, we hear this all the time about how it's too expensive and all these other things. And, this really could make it more accessible for a lot of people who have an interest in participating. Like you said, it wasn't as fun. It didn't go as smooth as an in-person convention. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that would still show up in person. I'd still go to a lot of the in-person conventions just because, it is a lot more fun. It's more than just the convention. It's the parties. It's the socializing.
Yeah, exactly. And for someone like myself, who's been described by other people as charismatic, that's like giving myself a handicap, like right out the gates, let's make this electronic. So that takes away a whole element for me. But at the same time, I realize that is selfish and entitled. And, I do want everyone to be able to participate. The problem with doing half in person, half online, is the voices online aren't going to be heard as well. But if they weren't going to go in the first place, I guess they're heard better. Obviously, there's no perfect scenario in this.
Right. I think, and that's a really good point, because if my options are to not go or to go and maybe be heard, then going and maybe being heard is better. If my options are to actually go or to, save some money and do it online, then I guess that, if my voice is not heard as well, that should be something that I know going in. And, if I miss an opportunity because of that, that's kind of my own fault, I guess.
That's very true. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, but it's really interesting to see where all this stuff is going to go.
It is. And also with this whole, also Zoom and COVID has been an opportunity for the Libertarian Party, because we do definitely seem to have a decent stranglehold on social media comparative to other parties. So, you know, whereas in person, you know, you look at someone like Donald Trump, who is great at rallying a crowd, he could say anything. He'd be like, you know, y'all think I'm the greatest person in the world and I got a dead hooker in my trunk. They're like, yeah, you know, and he can do that in person. But it's like online, I feel like people are looking for a little bit more substance. And then not only that, we're I'm running for Congress and being up here in Michigan as the affiliates director, using Zoom and utilizing technology has allowed me to create a new affiliate, or help create, because obviously it can't be done by myself. And then, you know, using social media to broadcast our message, different things like that. So it does present opportunities and new struggles too. So it's just, you know, it's double-edged.
Yeah. So let's talk about your campaign, because I saw recently you had some posts. You were, I guess, were you going to Republican convents, Republican events to recruit or infiltrate? What's going on there?
So I drove up to Marquette this last weekend. I just wanted to basically, I had a lot of door knockers and things like that. And Marquette is a college town, and I've kind of, you know, after looking at different polls and studies like that, I saw that the demographics under 40 are much more, you know, likely and appreciative of third parties than, say, anything above. You get above 60, the age of 60 and above, it's like 1-2% considering voting third party. So going to Marquette was, you know, a calculated move. Obviously, it's a college town. So I went down to the college area where the frats are and everything like that. I handed out literature. We had to kind of come up with like our own protocol to handle and be careful with COVID. And we did a good job with that. We were wearing masks and, you know, carrying hand sanitizer in my back pocket, being real careful, doing the best we could. So we did great with that. So now how we get to the Trump thing, I run out of door knockers. We canvass the entire, you know, portion of the college area of Marquette. And I was talking with Dan, who's on my campaign team, and he's actually like, he's done a lot of photography and different things like that, and he's interested in stuff like that. So I was like, we need more footage, man. I was like, if we're going to do a social media blitz the last week, we need more footage. So he's like, well, let's drive downtown and see what's going on, you know? And we end up having like a Trump train, I guess is what you call it, you know, like 100 lifted trucks driving in the same direction with Trump flags, thin blue line, everything like that, going, you know, wherever they're going, and they're honking their horns, and the college kids are coming outside like, fuck you, man, spitting at their trucks. And it was like the full on thing. I was like, we have to follow them. I was like, you realize we have to follow them. And he's like, okay. I was like, listen, I was like, if something happens to me, it's all right. But you just make sure you're safe and you keep filming. I'll be fine. I'll make sure I will protect you too. Like, it's going to be fine. Which I guess isn't necessarily a guarantee, because, you know, it's like a lot of combat vets and that demographic. So I probably would have gotten my ass whooped if they chose to. So we follow it. And they go like 15, 20 miles out of Marquette. And I forget what it's called. It's called like Scandia. I think it's called Scandia. It's like Scandinavia, but, you know, minus, you know, some key letters there. And they end up at this like little place. And I knew we were in the right place because people were stopped. They had a PA set up. You could see some people like starting to, you know, do like the catering gig for food and everything. I was like, all right, we're in the right place. And the most important thing, I think, for me, or, you know, as far as running a a campaign as a third party is trying to reach outside your norm. You got to get out of the echo chamber. You absolutely have right. to. Like, what are you doing if you're like just sitting around and hanging out with your buds, or like, you know, talking like, oh, cool, we found the two libertarians online that like this and went and hung out with them. Awesome. That's great. That's two more people we can get into the, like, you know, the affiliates, into the, you know, internal infrastructure. But we're not doing anything outside of that. So for me, this was like a great opportunity. And I think you have to talk to people that really don't want to hear your message. I think that's crucial. Like, you need to have the hard conversations. Absolutely. So we'll backtrack a little bit. Already on this day, I'm wearing like jungle combat boots from Vietnam, black pants, a black and green alien collared shirt. And I have a red hat on. I think it's from Austin Peterson's campaign. RIP Austin, you lost the LP, but you know, you made a cool hat. So it says to make taxation theft again on it. So already, I think a lot of those folks thought that it said like it was like a MAGA hat, right?
Right. He's one of us.
So I'm in, you know, but I have weird clothes on and I look very bizarre, but I mean, I'm in. You know, they got their camo and their American flag eagle, like getting ready to kill something shirts and whatever they're doing, mullets, whatever. No, just kidding. They're really nice people. So we show up and I still have like some literature and stuff to like hand out. I was like, all right. And I've never done anything like this before. So this was like certainly a first for me. And I was like, I just, you know, opportunity presented itself. Let's do it. So we start handing out all this literature. Dan is filming the whole time. We got like 3 gigs of footage. And, you know, I'm talking to different people and I'm like, hey, I'm running for Congress. I'm running, you know, I was like, I know you're a Republican. I know you already got a candidate. I was like, but I think you and I agree a lot more than you think we do. And I was like, take this literature. Tell me what you think. You know, here's the webpage. I'm running against Jack Bergman. That's the, I guess, incumbent, right? That's the guy that's already there. So, you know, he's already been elected for 2 years. The cool thing about it, though, is Jack has done a terrible job connecting with his local constituents and the people that got him elected. He only shows up if, like, Trump's there and, like, to do the cool thing. So Trump was not there. So I had an opportunity. He was not there. And I walked around, handed out all this literature. And the people were very nice and very respectful. I'm shooting from the hip the whole time. And towards the end of this event, like all of a sudden, some guy starts speaking. And I still don't know who he is or anything like that. He was obviously an organizer. And he's like, does anyone have any questions? And I look over at my buddy Dan. Like, oh yeah, here we go. And so I just raise my hand and he points at me. So I just start walking to him, right? Like, I'll just start walking to him. So I, instead of just asking the question or anything like that, I get closer. I'm like, hey, I'm running for Congress. And he thinks I probably have a MAGA hat on, right? Yeah. Do you think I can say a few words? And he's like, yeah, no problem, brother. So he gives me the microphone. And usually in instances like this, I usually like pray to myself or whatever, you know, it is. And I was like, just make sure to be yourself. So I get the microphone and there's, you know, close to 200 people there. And I'm like, what I'm about to tell you has a lot of ball. Yeah, it takes a lot of balls is the first thing I said. And I was looking at the footage. I was like, God, you could do better. I guess you should make sure you have a speech rehearsed the next time you crash a Trump rally and get the microphone.
Right.
So, and then I'm like saying that, and I was like, listen, there's a ridiculous divide in this country. You used to think of the person that lived next door to you as your neighbor. I was like, now you think of them as a Democrat or a Republican. I was like, we used to care about our local communities. We used to care how people were affected, and we didn't stand for tyranny. I said, now we're in a position where we're $27 trillion in debt. I was like, we're in 7 different conflicts. I was like, and our veterans are not being taken care of. And I was like, here's what I mean by that. I would not create veterans. I would do everything I can to not create veterans. We need to, and I stole Joe's line, you know, Switzerland armed and neutral. So I went there because I didn't have a speech prepared. And, you know, and I'm saying all this stuff, and I was just really trying to juggle our principles with a compassionate message while also trolling, I guess, you know, let's face it, like I crashed a Trump rally. So, and I did all that and I give the full speech and I was just like, if you feel the same way I do, like, you know, you have a third option. There's someone that is willing to vote against these ridiculous tax hikes. There's someone to stop this national debt. Like, and I'll tell you what, I can't promise you that I can by myself, but what I can do is expose all the frauds as I introduce bills into Congress. And I was like, that's if I'm lucky. I got to tell you about Senate. I got to tell you about congressional subcommittees and stuff like that. I was like, they have a stranglehold on the Congress and it was never meant to be and it's unconstitutional. You should send me there, though, because I will do everything I can to completely disrupt this process. I was like, I'd like to neuter the federal government and get it out of your life, essentially forever. So I think I ended the speech with like, my name's Ben Bourne, I'm from Congress and I'm an alien. And then, you know, mic drop, boom.
Nice.
And I had a
good... How did it go? I mean, did you get any cheers or anything?
Yes, actually, not as many as you thought. It wasn't crickets, but there was some people, and guess what? They were under the age of 40. Shocker. So, and they're holding a Trump flag too. They were holding a Trump flag. And there was, you know, like probably, so that's a terrible percentage, but I might have stolen Jack, like out of Jack Bergman's voters there, I got maybe 3% of them out of 200, so like maybe 6. Still legendary status as far as I'm concerned. That shit was scary.
I mean,
and then so I'm talking with like these young people. It was all young people. One's got his Trump flag right there. I almost said Confederate. He's got his Trump flag right there. And he's just like, you know, he's like, listen. And he's like, we're talking and doing everything like that. He's like, yeah, I'm going to vote for you, but I'm still voting for Trump. I was like, you know, I didn't go there because I'm a candidate. So I can't just be like, you know, fuck Trump, fuck Biden. Like, I hate everyone.
Right.
So I couldn't do that. But I was like, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I find it very interesting. This was all spur of the moment for me. And I'm really happy I was here. I feel like I was in the right place. I'm very happy to meet you. And he asked me the hardest question that I've had the entire campaign. And he's like, I'm going to ask you a hard question. I was like, sure, you know, like, try me. And he actually asked a question that made me very, I guess you'd say, uncomfortable and unfamiliar waters, something I never thought about. And he said, what do you think about the family court system? And what do you think about father's rights? And I got to be honest, I don't have kids. And I haven't been in that scenario.
Oh, man.
So
you don't have to look too far in the Libertarian Party to find so many dads who have been screwed over by that system.
I know that. Yes, you're right. But in that particular moment, I can't get on my phone. Actually, it was dead anyways. And I'm not going to be able to put out like a SOS call. Like, hey, I need help answering these questions for this guy right here, you know? So I was like, I talked to him about it and I was like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I was like, I got to tell you, I don't have kids. I got to be honest. I'm not in your shoes. I've dealt with the courts before. I understand how frustrating it can be. I was like, I was a child and I got to see the breakdown of things as well. And, you know, the child support and different things like that in a split parenting household or households. And, I feel for you. More than anything, I'd like to hear what you think needs to be done and how I can help. Because obviously, you're right. You actually asked me the hardest question that I've been asked so far. But I was like, as far as me being a congressman in Washington, D.C. and how can I help you? You know, my answer is pretty simple. And I think this is like a good fallback answer, no matter what questions asked or anything like that. You're like, well, I just don't think the federal government whatsoever should have any involvement. Now, we could talk about states' rights, but honestly, if it's my opinion, I feel like we need decisions made locally to be the most effective and impactful. First of all, I was like, also, I think any parent that wants to be involved in their child lives needs to be able to do so. And I also think that some of the standards as far as wages and the amount of money you have to pay are kind of ridiculous. And I do think they are. So any parent willing to co-parent should be given that opportunity, you know, on a 50-50 basis. And I just wish the court wasn't involved in that, regardless of if they've made mistakes or not. Now, if we got someone that's like screwing up really bad and they might be strung out at the moment or something like that, like, yeah, maybe the other parent should have the kid for a little while. That doesn't mean indefinitely. It means this person needs a chance to take care of themselves and work on themselves. And then let's get both parents back involved and do some co-parenting, because that's what's best for the child. So he actually really liked that answer. His wife did. Their baby was there. I felt like they wanted me to kiss that baby, but I wasn't going to do that.
Come on, pull a Joe Biden. Just slip in there and go for a sniff and a kiss.
I'm not good at the whole traditional thing. You know what I mean? Like, right. But they were really nice people. I took some pictures with them. We talked a lot. I got their information. I wish I could remember their names right now. I met so many though, and you only have so much bandwidth. So I remember the substance of the conversation, their faces, just not their names.
Right.
So that was, you know, there was also a couple of really nasty people at that rally too. Let's talk about them. I'm handing out literature, right? And this one lady's like, "You're running for Congress?" I was like, "Yes, ma'am, I am." She's like, "Jack Bergman's got my vote." And she almost like tries to punch me and hand me my literature back. And it's being filmed the whole time. So I like juke her out. You know, I didn't do quite a Heisman, but I just like juke her out and like walk away. I was like, "Nah, you can keep that." And I just keep going on, you know, like, I don't got time for that. Like, of course you're going to find resistance. Like, you're talking to people that disagree with you. So they think, it was overall a very positive experience. I was actually shocked at the kindness, that those people extended to me being in that situation with like some weirdo with an alien shirt on, showing up and grabbing a microphone at the rally.
Yeah, I mean, it's you bring up a really good point. Like, as much as I was asked this question all the time when I was on the campaign trail, what are you going to do to like defeat Trump? But like, it was always asked in a way about like, you know, how are you going to go out and destroy him? How are you going to go out and break his legs, metaphorically? And like, it's like, well, that doesn't work. I mean, imagine if you had walked into that Trump rally with like a giant Trump sucks flag. You'd have been instantly rejected.
Yep.
And it's like the one thing I always say is we have to recognize the politicians and the voters as separate, right? We can't just call them all Democrats because one of them are dirty, sneaky bastards, and the other ones
are. We hate collectivism, so we can't do that.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, but yeah, but it's like, yes, yeah, like these are people who vote Republican, they're voting for Trump, but it's like they're not the ones who are going into Congress coming up with these bullshit rules. They're, if anything, just misled. And when you want their votes, like libertarians want their votes. We want to go to these people and say, hey, vote for us instead. And you don't just like walk into a room and say, everybody in here is a piece of shit, so you should vote for me. No, they're going to be like, what? Screw that guy.
And that's how you get beat up.
Exactly. And this is like, this is interesting too, because like you showed like you went, this wasn't like you were just there hiding out and not letting anyone know. They knew that you were there. You were not a Republican. I don't know whether or not you said you were a Trump supporter or whether or not you said you weren't.
Oh, yeah. They said anyone who's cool with Trump is cool with me. And I was like, no.
But like.
So, yeah.
But so
I threw it out there.
But yeah. Like, they weren't violently attacking you. And we see all these videos where people get into fights, and it's like, yeah, there's usually somebody who goes up and, like, the first thing they do is they start throwing insults, or they have an insulting sign or something. And yeah, freedom of speech and all that stuff, that's great. You have a right to do that. But if you're trying to, like, win something over, like, if you're trying to win a person over and win their vote, that's not necessarily the best tactic for that. In fact, it's probably one of the worst tactics. And I think that's very important for libertarians to learn, especially, like, if we're trying to win votes from these people.
It's about branding, too. And I think that you have a great brand. Like, I actually really like your brand. You've done a great job. You've got a lot of followers. You're doing a good job. So you got to make a brand, but at the same time, you don't want to be abrasive. And, you know, and this is sales. And I talked to Larry Sharp about this earlier in the year about it, too. And, you know, he was breaking it down for me. And, like, I cannot believe how much money that guy raised. Like, holy cow. You know, he's crazy hustler, you know. So trying to juggle all that. And this is a sales. This is sales. That's all it is. We're trying to get votes, which is the equivalent of money. You know, it's the same thing. And or I'll take the money too. But not really. I don't need any more for the rest of the campaign. But you know what I mean, though? You have to sell yourself, and you have to brand yourself however you can best while being original and principled.
Absolutely. I would say, you know, even though we're at the end of the campaign, it's not too late to keep raising money, especially if you're planning on a second run, which, you know, you said this is your first run. I'm sure you learned tons. I mean, you've already talked about a lot of things you've learned. Taking that and recycling it for another year for another election is, I mean, you're going to do so much better because you've learned so many things along the way. So when you start, you're going to have a head start, but you're also going to, so I guess my point is, you know, don't stop fundraising. And that's, I don't know who said this or where I heard it from, but they say never stop fundraising or always be fundraising. And, like, they say that about even elected people. And, you know, it's true. Like, Obama was in office for, like, you know, 8 years. And for, like, the entirety of all 8 years, he was fundraising. For what? After the second election? I have no idea, because I don't know where that money goes or what. But he's always fun. Or maybe he's fundraising for, like, other Democrats. But yeah, absolutely. Because this is – and this is another thing, you know, we kind of have to get used to is – like we're not gonna win this revolution of ideology if we just show up, you know, every 2 years and fight for a couple months. Like, this is something that has to be going on year round,
continually.
So, yeah, absolutely. So I'm committed to that. Hopefully you are too. What kind of commitment level are you talking about? I'm gonna put you on the spot here.
gosh. So, you know, like, this is another thing that Larry Sharp, he really got me thinking. And he was breaking down the four types of people there are that we need, right? You got your activists, probably the most important, if you ask me. You have your candidates, you have your volunteers, and you have your donors. And for me, I'm wearing a lot of hats because I've donated. I'm an activist, I'm volunteering, and I'm a candidate. So it's really tough, and I want to be able to specialize because I'm not going to just, like, disappear. I don't want to ghost. I'm not going on, like, some solo Jedi mission to go find myself or nothing like that. Like, I want to be able to help. Like, I'm here. I'm pissed off. Like, I see the writing on the wall. Like, if we make it to 2024, I'd love, or 2022 for that matter, I'd like to be able to help, but I'm trying to figure out where I'm best suited to help. And I'd like to be able to specialize, you know, on the local level, I'm the outreach director. At the state level, I'm the affiliates director. Now I'm being a candidate. Those things conflict. Okay. And here's a perfect example. We had a candidate in, actually my local affiliate that was posting, like, these memes that if you ask me, they're racist. They were straight up racist. There's no other way to call it. Our state chair, he saw that, and we had a meeting coming up anyways. We burned that person, and we're like, we do not support this person. I talked to that person on the phone, different things like that. And I was just like, I'm going to go introduce a resolution at my local level to make sure that you're not on our ticket. I was like, this isn't okay. I hope you reconsider the way that you're acting. He had a meme that was, free BLM shirt. And then it was like, all you have to do is basically, and it had this picture of this cotton, like pick it. I was just like, what a motherfucker, like that. And I was pissed. But the thing is, as a candidate, and me being in, the state and that local affiliate where this candidate came from, I created a lot of turmoil. And I actually basically at the same time inside our own ranks sabotaged my own campaign for being so passionate about getting rid of him. Okay. And people were, and so I want to be able to specialize is what I'm getting at. And I don't know what I'm best at. I don't know.
Let me where propose I can this. Because I find myself in that same position. I've been a donor. I've been an activist. I've been a candidate. I think as, and I don't even know what I am right now. But what I do see is that kind of this thing that I've created. Maybe it's my brand, my personal brand, is I've been able to recruit other people who are volunteers. I've been able to recruit other people who are activists, other people who are donors, and probably even a couple who have been candidates. And so in that way, it's, if you are the most passionate person about these things, and you take it upon yourself to recruit other people to do these things, then it's okay for you to not do them. So for example, if you're spending all of your time recruiting people in all four of those positions, then those people are doing those four things for you. And your time is like, you're not one of the four, you're a multiplier. You're making sure that there are more of those people doing all those things. But at the same time, I would suggest that there's this, the whole concept of like the best, you want to be a leader, not a master, right? I guess.
I want to be a servant. Yes. I want to be a servant, and I'd like to be a trusted person to carry a message. But yeah, it's like a leader, but it's not,
Right. But I guess I'm trying to make the comparison is usually made like in the workplace, right? You want to be a leader, not a boss, right? That kind of thing. And so I think like in that way, you still do a little bit of all of the, all of these, you still wear all of these four hats that we're talking about, but you're recruiting so many more people and you have, you're still doing enough of it that you're still getting more experience. You're still sharing that experience with other people and you're motivating other people to continue to do those things. But you're not necessarily focusing all on one. Because let's say you gave that all up and said, okay, yeah, you know what? I really want to focus on being an activist. You have now lost all of the good that you could do in recruiting volunteers and candidates and everything else. And maybe you'll still do some of that, but I think that's really kind of an important part of this is, if you want to focus on something, go ahead and focus on it. As long as you make sure that you're being visible, which donors aren't really visible. Candidates and activists are usually really visible. Volunteers can be visible. But as long as you're recruiting more of those people and you're helping to set an example for those, I think that is a tremendous help because all of those people are absolutely necessary. But there are a lot of people who just can't do some of these other things that you're talking about. So if you have the capacity to do all of them, lead in all of them, recruit other people and help build in the Liberty Movement. That would be my suggestion for you.
I know. So then it's like, okay, I'd like to micro what you just said, right? because I'm really genuinely looking for advice in this area. Now, does that mean that I should take a position at the state level? And the reason I would take a position at the state level is because when you're talking to someone new to the party, new to things like that, when you have that street cred and you're involved with that, it's just that much more to your sales pitch. Like, oh yeah, he's a part of this. Whereas, oh no, like, yeah, I'm not actually in there. Like, you know, hey, you should do this though. So like, you have to have that in order to do that. Now, if I am involved in the state party, that's where the conflicts are created, or my local party, that's where I create the conflicts where I could be passionate. And that's the activism too, unfortunately. And I just, like, there's just certain things I'm just not going to shut up about. And I feel like that's almost more of like, in my own life, I have a terrible moral compass, but as far as this is concerned, I'm pretty good at it, you know, like overall macro. So like, it's really hard to decide, like, as of, you know, someone who's only got so much time to give and we don't get paid for this, how do I best spend my time? And that's where I'm at. And you don't have to answer that right now either. It's just like, if you think about it, I'd love an answer, because I just need to figure this out, because, you know,
yeah,
re-elections are coming up for the state party, for my local party. They're all coming up. And I'm like, do I run again? Do I do this stuff? Do I stay involved on this level? Do I just like try and do something in 2022? You know, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you definitely don't want to overcommit. You do want to budget your time. You want to make sure that you're not putting in too much, because you will get burned out. But,
well, not only that though, but I want to do really good. I want to do like a stellar job at like one or two things. And yeah, if I can bring people in and still keep them interested and have them fill certain roles, well, then it's like, that's awesome. And if I can still do my own thing and it fits within time constraints, then I think that's golden. It's just, man, trying to find that balance.
Whew. Right. Well, I mean, imagine this. You build your own network of, you know, dozens, tens, hundreds of people who are, you know, everything you're looking for. Donors, volunteers, activists, and candidates. And when you start your next election up, or, well, before that, let's say there's a big rally that's going on. Maybe it's organized by the Libertarian Party. Maybe it's organized by Normal. Maybe it's organized by one of the organizations that fights for fathers' rights in the family courts. Any of these, there's a thing going on. It's a rally, it's a march, whatever. You call up all of your people who are activists and you say, hey, there's this event, go there. And maybe you go with them, but maybe you don't have time. You are facilitating getting more people to that event, which is more heads, more feet, all of that. When the Libertarian Party needs to raise money, you can reach out to your donors. When you're running your campaign, you can reach out to your donors. So if your main focus is as a candidate and you're building this resource network, then you can absolutely totally take advantage of that. For, I know that sounds bad, taking advantage. Take advantage of the network, not of the people, for your campaigns and for everything else that you're associated with that you believe in, whether they're nonprofits, whether it's a Libertarian Party, you know, all these things. And I know I'm not involved in, like, I'm not I don't have any position with the Libertarian Party right now. I haven't since, I don't even know if I officially did. I think I did have a position at one point with Bear County, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I just went to a bunch of meetings. But either way, like, I don't have anything now, but I still support everything that they do. Whenever there's an event, I tell people to go. Whenever there's media, I share it. And it's not just the Libertarian Party. There's other organizations that I share too. But I think this kind of helps, because all of the people that are following me who are, you know, these four types of people, all of those people are now helping whenever I find something that I'm interested in helping to support. I just need to share that and everybody else gets involved with that. And I think that's really important because we become multipliers. We become sharers. And ultimately that's what's necessary. There's, you know, if we're kind of the organizers of people, we get more people involved in this thing. And that's ultimately what it takes to win this revolution, is to get millions, to get to the point where we have millions and millions of people. But that's not just going to happen because there's one guy who's the chair of a party and he's got a million people who follow him. Nobody's got the capacity to organize that type of thing. We work with a few people who work with other people who work with other people. So, you know, you can always pick up new volunteers and tell them, hey, if you're interested in helping with something over here, go help out with that. And maybe they're, you know, maybe they just want to sit behind their desk and do something on a computer that helps, you know, that helps one of the organizations. They don't want to get out. They don't want to go to a march. They don't want to run for any office. That's great. And I think we can all kind of, you know, help to find those people and bring them in and give them opportunities to help.
Absolutely. And then you make me think about like those four types of people involved. And it's like, well, that doesn't necessarily make that set in stone either. Then there's a couple other different kinds you could add to the mix too. Obviously, the one that you're talking about the most, for lack of a better term, I would call influencer, or, you know, just general leader. The person that is involved in all of that and doing the different things and jumping in where they need them, or her, whoever. And then after that, I would also say, like, you know, the militia type, not militia, but, you know, Hawaiian shirt enthusiasts or whoever is in agreement with our ideals. You know, they serve a very important purpose too, possibly one of the most important ones, because they're protecting our First Amendment. So, you know, and I forgot about that. So some of the rallies I went to, like 2 weeks ago, I was in Lansing and we did a Unity Coalition, and it was a basically invite everyone and let's all talk about what we have in common and, you know, go from there and like try and not fight, because the media, you know, and the premise was, you know, the media portrays us out to be this or that, whatever. And, you know, all of us really have some very centralized goals as far as getting rid of decentralization, the overreach of the federal government, things like that. So that was a very interesting opportunity to speak as well. So that was a lot of Hawaiian shirt enthusiasts and inviting different organizations like BLM, Proud Boys were invited, Antifa was invited, Trumpers, Biden people, you know, anything you could think of, NFAC was invited. So we were trying to have like some really, you know, nice, polite discussions. But what I've noticed about the places that I've went, and I wanted to give a shout out to them for this, especially Hawaiian shirt enthusiasts, when they show up somewhere on the ground, the police are a lot more polite and they aren't trying to be intimidating towards any other group of activists. They're just making sure that everyone's safe. And right, there's something to be said for that. So I do think that they should be included. And I know that's also scary because, you know, they're getting labeled as this and that. They're very much a part of this movement just as much as I am, if not more important, because, you know, I'm not going to be able to go speak on the Capitol of Michigan in Lansing last weekend unless there's like 75 people in full kits, you know, marching around with their flags. And they're not being rude. They're not causing a stink. They love everyone. You know, they got the LGBT flag. They got the BLM on their flag. There's, I don't know what that igloo means, but, you know, they're just as much an important part of this. So I almost forgot about that, but yeah, I have some tremendous love for them. And when I went to go open and speak for Spike earlier this year, at the Flint Water Treatment Facility, we had, you know, a very warm welcome from those boys, and they did a great job keeping the peace. They didn't really need to because everyone there was, you know, very polite. But it's a full different ball game when you have a rally or a protest and the police are not coming out in full force. So, you know, it's a different message. And I think it gives people a little more courage for sure.
Yeah. That's interesting. You said Flint, and now I just want to know what happened there. How did that go?
Spike, one of his campaign stops was in Flint, Michigan. Aaron Adams, I believe, was the site manager. Anthony Welty was whatever Spike's handler. I don't know what he was doing. Anthony's pretty awesome too, though. And yeah. So there was an event for Spike to go speak down there. And I feel like there was at its peak probably about 300 people. And we did it right in front of the Flint water treatment facility. And I can't think of like anything better or more symbolic right. of, you know, the fuckery of government. And like, we poisoned a lot of people. We did a terrible job, but you know, give us some more money. We'll fix this up. Like, hell no, they're still drinking out of water bottle, like, you know, bottles of water. Like they can't even drink tap water still. They didn't fix anything. So we had a great interaction with the local people in that area and everything was safe. We had lots of Hawaiian shirt enthusiasts. Spike gave a killer speech and Aaron, you know, I woke up probably earlier that week because I knew I was going and I felt like I was going to give a speech there. I didn't ask to, I didn't do anything like that, but I just mentally prepared myself for that. I put it out however you want to think of it, you know? And with probably about 30, 40 minutes before showtime, Aaron gives me a call. She's like, hey, why don't you give a speech? You're gonna introduce Spike. I was like, all right. You know, because I already felt like I was going to do this. But, you know, at the same time, it's very different when you're actually getting the call. So it's like, okay, all right, let's do this. So then I gave, honestly, of the season, I think that was probably my favorite speech that I've given so far. It was another on-the-spot one, but it was very interactive with the crowd. And it's a lot more fun for me giving a speech to people that are already interested in what you have to say, as opposed to trying to like slip it in there, you know, at a Trump rally or something and watching what you say. So I had a really good time, and that was a great event. It was very well planned and on all aspects. And I really enjoyed that. And that was the first time I actually met Spike in person too. So it was interesting to see that. I did endorse him, you know, before we had our convention and everything like that. I also think Spike is a perfect example of the direction that the party is going in, even though like there's several caucuses that had to come together in order to get him elected. That was a prime example of like the passing of the torch. And if all the people that kind of agree alike in our circles decide to work together, I mean, it really can't be stopped, you know?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Wow. That's awesome. Man. So I know we kind of went into like talking a lot about the future. Yeah, I guess your own person. I was trying to coerce you into being a more active libertarian, I guess.
I'm interested. Like I'm game. Like yeah. I like to be of service. I don't necessarily, no, I don't like the word leader.
Right.
So if there's something I can help with and people think that I could help with something, like by all means, tell me so. And you know, I will explore that and see to the best of my ability what I'm able to help with and make a calculated decision on, you know, what's best for everyone, because it's just not about me. And a lot of times in my life, especially in my personal life, I definitely have a sense of entitlement. I think the world revolves around me. All that seems to stop when I get involved in libertarianism and I try and make the best decisions based on everyone. So it actually brings out the best of me. So it's really nice. And it's a cool, different reward from anything else I've been involved in my life.
Right. What are some of the things that you've learned from being on the campaign trail?
as a third party candidate and just as a human, you got to speak to your audience for sure. You have to be very aware of where you're at and, you know, how can you be the most effective? It's really cool to like be the you know, the original libertarian, the best libertarian, the only libertarian, and like do that. And that's awesome. Like you can big dick the shit out of it for all I care, but it doesn't win any hearts or minds. So you have to be so cognizant of your surroundings and where you're at and who you're speaking to and adjust on the fly your message, not so much your principles, but your message and your delivery. So I think that that is like a very crucial thing that I saw there. Other things I learned, I would start way earlier than I did. We had that late campaign to decide who our, you know, our candidates were and stuff like that. Like before even you're considered the nominee for your state party or your local party or the national party, you should have a good ground game. You should have organization in wherever you need to be. Now, if you're like a presidential candidate, you should have organization in all 50 states. If you're, you know, going to be a federal candidate, make sure you have organization inside your district and just set it up as if you're going to win, and start there and just run the whole thing as if you've already won. I think that that would be huge because our conventions where they're at right now does not allow enough time for one of us to mount a good ground game and the campaign that we need now. And of course, we have people that defy that all the time. I just wonder what they would do with more time. Other things that I've learned. I made a lot of mistakes and you can't let that define you as a person, a candidate, an activist, whatever. It can't define you. There was a point in this campaign where like my personal life was in shambles, like relationships, whatever. I was really depressed and all that stuff that I was talking about with, you know, the internal party politics up here. So like everything was weighing on me really heavy and I really shut down emotionally and as a candidate, everything like that. But what I did do was rally. At one point, I just was like, you know, I kept playing it out. Like, I'm going to get past election day and I'm going to have like this handful of coulda, woulda, shouldas, you know, or, you know, and I can still go out and I still have time and I can make a difference and forget about that stuff and concentrate on what I can do. So no matter what kind of mistakes are made, you have to be able to have a short-term memory loss with that and continue to persevere because nothing's going to work out the way you want it to. I don't think there's anything as like a such thing as a perfect campaign. Life is never going to be where you want it to be when you run. I told my dad that too. And like, I told him I was running for Congress and I was like, Dad, I don't have my shit together the way I want it to be. Like I thought maybe I'd do this one day, but it's like, this is not like the circumstance I wanted to do it in. And he's like, Ben, it's never going to be that way. It's just never going to be that ever. So you just have to go with it. So those are some of the things I learned. Team morale, building a team too. Those are big things. You have to keep your team excited. Even if you're having self-doubt, you have to make sure that you express confidence and excitement and appreciation of your team. You just have to do that no matter what your circumstances are. And the people on my team are all my friends. None of them had any experience and what they were able to accomplish with little resources, little money, being volunteers, not getting paid, doing it on their own dime was incredible. You know, like it was absolutely amazing. I was shocked, you know, like those things are amazing. So being a really good team member and being cognizant and throwing out those compliments, even if you have self-doubt, you really have to be able to have that poker face and let everyone know that they're doing a great job, because they are. Everyone's doing the best they can with what they got. And right. Yeah, you know,
awesome.
We're all in for reasons, so just got to do it.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's always circumstances. I had throughout my campaign, there was all kinds of crap coming my way in my personal life, and it was always, this is big. We have to keep pushing through this. So yeah, that can be really difficult. And I mean, like to put this in perspective for everybody, it's like, in your life, like, okay, fine. Okay, everything's fine right now. I don't have anything to worry about. But someone in the family dies, or someone gets sick, or there's like an issue with something. There's a storm coming. A house gets crushed by a tree. All these things that happen, like, think about a campaign spans a year or more. And it's like, have you ever gone an entire year without something coming up? No, absolutely not. It's really, there is no perfect time, and you have to just try and get through it as best you can. And, you know, sometimes you got to take a little break from the campaign. Sometimes you got to try and just kind of weather through it. But it is definitely tough. So, you know, kudos to you for making it through.
Thank you.
And you've got your results coming up in results should be in about what, a week?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is going to be a weird election, so we'll see what happens. But
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So before we wrap the show up, I just want to ask if there's anything, let's get your website, your social media links. If there's anything else you want to promote, are you still, I know you said you're not looking for donations, but you want to reconsider and ask for some donations. Give us some info where to follow you after the election is over. What area can someone vote for you? That sort of thing.
I guess after talking to you, I would reconsider that. And it's I can't see myself making it the rest of my life unless a giant asteroid collides with the Earth, not trying to pursue something and raise some hell. So I probably will run again, and those campaign funds can be used for that. I still have a lot of yard signs, so I would like to run for Congress again. I think that would be, you know, the most economically viable. So you can find me at Born for Liberty, FOR, not the number, bornforliberty.com. We'll keep that website going through the election, past the election. We'll have updates. It might change over the course of the next 2 years. We'll see where it goes. I have Ben Born for Congress as well as another resource you could reach out to me at. Other than that, you know, most of my social media and different things like that are more personal. I am on social media. I mean, so you can find me, and if you want to talk or you want to throw out a donation, like, yeah, I'm going to stick around. I mean, I'm not going to like disappear. There's no Jedi mission where I get to go disappear into the mountains. Cause even if I tried to, they'd ask me if I had a permit or if I was paying property taxes. So I'm not going anywhere. I'd love to be here, and I'd love to help and do whatever I can. I just don't know exactly what that is. I'm not trying to be a leader. And I, you know, if I can help the party, and something I learned from Vermin Supreme, I'm offering my services. If there's something you think I could do, if there's something I could help with, then, you know, let me know and I'll be there. And I want to be able to support all my other candidates and all the other people doing amazing things. So please reach out to me anytime if Dan, you or anyone else is doing something, and I'll happily share that event, like what's going on, anything like that. I think it's really important that we lift each other up regardless of our differences. That's something huge that I learned too. You don't have to agree with someone 100% ideologically to consider them an ally, a friend, family, doesn't matter. Like, you just, you know, you, there's, we're all so different. But we share such a strong bond when it comes to liberty that we don't have to, we don't have to concentrate on the tiny little things.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Ben, it's been great having you here. I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Taxation is Theft. If you like what you heard, even if you didn't, we didn't really talk about anything that anyone wouldn't like, but click like, share, subscribe, and follow. And don't forget to help us out. Head over to taxationstheft.info. We don't ask for handouts, of course, but if you go there and you buy anything from our shop, it does help all of our efforts to end taxation in the United States and around the world. Get rid of those damn taxes everywhere. Taxation is theft.
Damn right.
I will catch you guys next time. See you later.